What's up, everyone? I'm Andrew Steinwald, and this is Zima Red. On this show, we speak with the users, founders, and creatives that are diving into the world of unique digital assets, also called non-fungible tokens.
Andrew Steinwald is the managing partner of Sifirmion, an investment firm focused on the NFT ecosystem. All opinions expressed by Andrew and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Sifirmion. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. Sifirmion or related entities may maintain positions in the assets discussed in this podcast.
My guest today is John Crane. John is a co-founder and CEO of SuperRare Labs, which is the entity that created SuperRare, one of the top NFT art platforms in the world. John has an amazing background. He's a self-taught coder, dove deep into Bitcoin, discovered Ethereum, found out about NFTs, had a passion for art, and joined all that together to launch SuperRare in early 2018. We go all throughout the history of SuperRare, the trials and tribulations of being a founder in an emergent industry, and the almost absurd conviction it takes to build. It is really inspiring to hear John's story. It makes you understand the amount of conviction and grit that is needed to create something as successful as SuperRare. We also discuss the team's pathway to decentralize the platform from SuperRare to the SuperRare DAO. I don't want to give too much away, but hearing the vision where anyone can have input into the evolution of the platform is remarkable. If you love art, NFTs, motivating stories, well then you have to check out this episode. Please enjoy my conversation with John Crane. John, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm super excited to chat with you. And to get us started, I'd love to hear a little bit about your background.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for having me, Andrew. Excited to be here. And yeah, I guess, you know, my background was probably like similar to many people in crypto, pretty meandering. So I actually studied architecture and civil engineering in my for undergrad, and then learned about processing while I was in school. I was a big doodler, and so when I learned about processing, I was pretty excited. I was like, holy shit, it's like, you know, doodling on steroids if I just, you know, learn how to code, which was, you know, much harder than people had told me it would be. But still eventually, like, started falling down, like, the programming rabbit hole, decided I was going to, like, switch my plan, didn't go into architecture. And I moved to New York and worked in advertising. While I was in New York, I went to a bunch of different meetups. One of those meetups was a New York Bitcoin meetup. And, you know, quickly fell down that rabbit hole. Just started, you know, devouring anything I could read about Bitcoin. And, you know, from there, I also heard these, you know, murmurings of this new blockchain that was going to have like a programming language built into it. And I was like, no, that sounds crazy. No one can be able to do that. That was Ethereum, and turns out that it did work. So once the Ethereum network launched, I decided I kind of wanted to go all in. And so I started working with Consensus, the Ethereum Venture Studio. And I was with them for about 2 years, focused on their Spoke Block Apps, which was kind of like an enterprise-focused Ethereum project. And, you know, but my personal interests were definitely more in kind of like the Web3, you know, thinking about like how there's this like programmable value layer for the internet. And I was just kind of like, yeah, I thought there was a huge potential for Web3 and kind of like the consumer web. And so when I saw the NFT standards being developed, I got really excited, you know, thinking about like, you know, basically everything on the internet has a unique ID. And so it felt like, you know, the NFTs could almost be applied to, you know, any type of internet media. And, you know, that combined with my, you know, interests in processing, generative art, digital art more broadly, I decided that it was time to try to build something myself. And so started prototyping SuperRare with Jonathan and Charles kind of late 2017, and we launched on Ethereum early 2018.
Wow, okay, that is just an incredible background. So I want to start with your kind of interest in architecture, because I feel like architecture is kind of like a perfect melding of art plus almost more of a, I don't know, quantitative kind of arena, because it's not like, you know, everything has to be very, you know, certain dimensions and certain lines and whatnot. So what was that initial interest in architecture? Like, why did you find that interesting yourself?
Yeah, so I mean, like, growing up, my mom actually wrote math textbooks, and so I was kind of like, she would always like help me with math. I was like pretty interested in it, but at the same time, I also like was just like, as a young kid, would doodle a lot, and so kind of was always interested in like the intersection of math and like creativity and like looking for the, you know, like patterns and shapes in, you know, things that I thought were interesting or beautiful. And so architecture seemed like a sort of like the merging of the two, right? There's the, you know, quantitative sort of like, is it possible to build this? But then you also get kind of like the, you know, freedom of expression part of it. And so, yeah, generally have kind of been, you know, a mixture of left brain, right brain, where like really enjoy the quantitative, but also love, you know, the creative sort of part of things.
And then also you mentioned processing. Could you explain what that is? I'm not even actually quite sure.
Oh yeah, sure. So processing is a programming language that was like basically developed to teach artists how to code. And so you didn't really have to learn like this. I mean, you still have to basically understand the basics of programming, but other than that, they've kind of like, it's like basically like a library where you can say like, okay, draw, you know, 5 random circles and make them, you know, this color. And so that was really fun for me to kind of like go take sketches I had done and then almost like recreate them, but, you know, using logic and code instead of a pencil and paper.
It's so cool. I had no idea that was like a thing. All right. So yeah. And then also you did a stint in advertising. Tell me about how that was.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was super fun working in New York, the agency world. It was also, again, kind of like a great mixture of creativity, but then also, you know, like the quantitative technical part. So yeah, I worked for a company called LBI that eventually merged with another company, and it was called MRY. And we did all sorts of things. Like, we had clients like, you know, Coca-Cola, AT&T, like, you know, household brands. And we would basically, I was on the creative tech team, so we would, you know, come in, be part of the pitch process, sort of like help think up crazy, interesting ideas. And then, you know, if we won the pitch, we'd then be tasked with actually going and building, you know, the thing we had just pitched to the client.
That's so cool. All right. So you were working there. And then during that time in advertising, you attended a New York City Bitcoin meetup. Like, what was the cause of that? Because I feel like that's like, you know, advertising Bitcoin, I can see how your background is definitely leaning towards this kind of interesting dichotomy of certain, I don't know, creativity and assets and whatnot. But yeah, how did you find that?
Yeah, so it was actually really interesting. So when I was taking my undergrad, I actually had to take a GE econ class. And it was actually during the fall of 2008. And so at the time I had zero interest in econ. I'm pretty sure I didn't even know what a stock was yet at that point. I took this econ class, like, could not have cared less, but it was, you know, being the time that it was, we had this super nice professor, and one day he came into the class and he was like, looked super upset and just announced to everyone. He's like, we need to murder these fucking bankers. And everyone was like, oh my God, like, what is going on? This is really different than the supply and demand curve we were learning about, you know, last Wednesday. And it kind of just like sparked my interest in finance generally. I started to like try and understand how it worked. You know, like, I was asking the teacher things like, what do you mean? You know, like, the markets are crashing, like, everyone's losing their money. Like, where's the money going? Like, how do you know? So it kind of just like kicked off this interest. And so, you know, years later, when I was in New York, I was still kind of like dabbling in finance, maybe just like, you know, learning and exploring. And so I had run across Bitcoin in some, you know, forums or something, or just like on the internet, kind of like reading about how it worked. And so when I found a meetup, I was like, oh, this is great. I can like go to this meetup and just ask everybody, you know, all the questions I have that, you know, it's taken me many blog posts that I've read through, and I still don't really understand what Bitcoin is. So Yeah, just sort of curiosity. But it sounded really interesting. Like, I liked the idea of, you know, a math-based money system. Like, to me, that made a lot of sense.
That's so cool. And then after that, you heard about Ether or Ethereum. And that to you was kind of like a mind-blowing kind of process when you were understanding the ramifications of Ethereum. Or how was that initial, like, because for me, it took me quite some time to figure out, like, what blockchain is. This is back in 2014, and I was reading all about it and trying to talk to people on forums, and it took me, like, weeks, right? But then it finally clicked eventually. But for you, like, what was that process with Ethereum? Because I feel like thinking about Bitcoin is kind of this, you know, uncensorable money, if you will. That's kind of its main use case. But then looking at Ethereum, it's like the potential there is unlimited. So how did that work?
Yeah, well, I'm a slower learner than you. I think I was reading about it for like months before I even really understood it. But yeah, no, it was, so I was super interested in Bitcoin. Around like when I first started learning about Bitcoin, a project called Counterparty actually had launched soon after. And I thought this was cool, like this idea of colored coins. So kind of like, you know, building a layer of abstraction on top of Bitcoin. Sounded pretty interesting. And then with Ethereum, right, they're taking a different approach. So, you know, with colored coins, you're using the lower level, you know, like you're using Bitcoin, but you're not really using the settlement layer. Like you're just like adding data to Bitcoin transactions. Whereas with Ethereum, you know, you have this smart contract language kind of built in. And so it's like a, you know, a core component. And just based on like the little, you know, I had like done a little bit of experimentation with Bitcoin, and you know, there is a scripting language that's part of Bitcoin, but just having, you know, the flexibility of Solidity sound, you know, it's kind of like a 0 to 1, like, and yeah, you know, I'm a huge fan of Bitcoin. I think it's like an incredible, you know, sort of like hard money, very interesting, you know, asset, but like Ethereum is something totally different, right? Like having this like programmable layer, it's a lot more flexible. And for me, it was like, oh, I can get more creative. Like I can try to write, you know, far more sophisticated smart contracts and transactions. And, you know, it's pretty straightforward. So, you know, the more I learned about Solidity, kind of like the more I fell in love and was just like, wow, I think, you know, if this works, it's going to be massive, and it's going to completely change kind of, you know, the consumer web that we know and understand today.
Okay, so you had that realization and you're like, this is going to be just absolutely crazy. I want to get more deeply involved. Did you know about consensus before, or did you find it when you're like, okay, I want to get more deeply involved. Like, where should I go? What should I do?
Yeah. So I was like, this is it. I'm just going to like, I'm going to go work on Ethereum. And so I was Googling, you know, places in New York that are hiring for blockchain stuff. And basically consensus was they had an angel list page that was hiring, and it was the only thing I could find. Like literally there were zero other, you know, blockchain jobs on AngelList in New York at the time. So I was like, well, it seems like this is my best option. And I think I actually applied through AngelList and didn't hear anything back. And then actually again through Meetup, I think I saw that they were having a hackathon or something. And I was like, aha, I'm gonna go there in person, and then they're gonna have to listen to me. And so I went to the Meetup, I went to the hackathon with Charles, and yeah, that's where I met everybody. And then, yeah, I think a week after the hackathon, I quit the current startup job I had and went to go work with Consensus.
That's awesome. Okay, so yeah, tell me about your time at Consensus. I feel like there was, that's kind of like the core of, I imagine it as like the core of this, the spread and kind of growth of Ethereum. So, and you were there from the very early days. So I'd love to hear about like what that was like.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty exciting and, you know, crazy time to be working in the space. I think, you know, the ecosystem was very different back then. So a lot of it was just like, you know, because even for myself, before the Ethereum network had launched, I was definitely a little bit skeptical as to whether or not it would work. And so a lot of it was like, you know, talking with skeptics and kind of showing them the technology and saying like, look, I know this sounds crazy, but check it out. Like, here's what you can do. And so a lot of what I did was actually kind of like showing off Solidity to people, like having calls with, you know, different like Fortune 500s, kind of talking through like, you know, here are use cases where you could potentially use smart contracts. You know, here's things you shouldn't use them for. So it was, I'd say education was the name of the game back then. So it was just kind of like spreading the word, teaching people about how these new systems could work. You know, almost like NFTs, 6 months ago, where it was still like, people were like, yeah, but like, I could just right click and save. So why is this useful? I'd say it was quite similar to that.
Okay. So you were at Consensus for roughly 2 years. At what stage did you start to learn about NFTs, and did that start to really interest you?
I had been, you know, kind of like following just general, you know, consumer crypto, you know, experiments and projects. So like some of the early stuff, like Spells of Genesis was like an early game company that was using the counterparty system on top of Bitcoin. And, you know, it was kind of following along in the Ethereum space. So there were like, you know, people doing kind of art experiments, or like CryptoPunks was, super early. Thought that was really interesting. And then, you know, really with, like when Dapper Labs published the NFT standard, I got really excited about it. Like I had kind of seen, you know, lived through the ICO craziness, and like that was all built around ERC-20, which is, you know, also an extremely simple standard. And so when I saw the standard being developed for ERC-721, I just got like, you know, beyond excited. I was like, holy shit, like if we make a standard for unique digital objects, that's going to be so powerful, right? It's going to work with every wallet, every exchange can support them. And that's really how it was kind of like, oh, I think this is going to be, you know, that foundational piece for, you know, how crypto kind of like in the consumer web, you know, merge.
Okay. And then, yeah, just going through your background, it's like you were born to create Super Rare. Like, you know, interested in architecture, processing, advertising, like went to the Bitcoin meetup. Like now it's all culminating into, you know, the prototyping of Super Rare, you said in like late 2017. So yeah, tell me about like that process. Like were you thinking, oh my gosh, I have a sick idea. We're going to make like digital art and we're going to use NFTs. And like, what was that founding thought process like?
Yeah. So my brother and I would, get together and on the weekend sometimes and just do like hack on projects. And so one weekend, you know, we were having some beers, just like hacking on things. And I was just like, it literally kind of just like, and you know, the most popular kind of consumer app on Ethereum at the time was this DEX called, EtherDelta. And I was just like, man, it's so crazy. Like, you know, all these people are excited about Web3. It's like the programmable value layer for the internet. And like, you know, all we've built so far, you know, this is like 2 years in, is like a really slow trading platform. And like nothing against like EtherDelta, right? It's like totally on chain. It was like pretty incredible. But I was just like, there's all this hype. Like, where are the really sick consumer apps? So I was just like thinking about it. And at some point I was like, Charlie, what if we built a DEX, but instead of for, you know, financial assets, what if you could trade art or photos? And I was like, is this possible? And he was like, yeah, I mean, I think it's possible. And I was like, all right, I'm going to start working on it and I'll get back to you. And so, yeah, it kind of just like sparked in that conversation. And kind of slowly, I wasn't able to like focus on other things. And so, yeah, I think probably about a month after Charlie and I had talked about it, I was pretty much just full-time focused on Super Rare.
That's awesome. Okay, so Were you buying CryptoKitties in 2017 and or 2018 and like experimenting with that and like the breedability and stuff like that? Or were you kind of just focused fully on your own kind of building?
So yeah, I would say I was not like a CryptoKitties power user, but yeah, I definitely was experimenting. Like I thought it was super cool. Like, you know, it was just like, I totally get it. Like this makes a lot of sense. But you know, like my personal interests were more like, and how could we use this for art? So that was like, you know, I experimented, but I was mostly focused on building SuperRare.
All right. So for the two or three people that are listening that don't know what SuperRare is, could you explain what is SuperRare and why is it exciting?
Yeah, absolutely. So SuperRare is a marketplace and social network for digital art. So if you've never heard of it, you could almost think about it like, you know, Instagram and meets Christie's. So it's a platform for like discovering new artists, collecting art, and showing off your collection.
What would you say is the most exciting aspect about SuperRare? It's going to be a really hard kind of question, but I want to hear just from you, like in your opinion, what is the most exciting aspect about SuperRare?
Yeah, I would say that is a tough question. Well, I mean, one of the most exciting things now is kind of this, you know, path of decentralization we're going down. But I mean, I think one of the most exciting things is that, you know, it was a great example, or, you know, I'm not going to say it's the only one, but it was like a completely organic community growth. Like when we first launched it, you know, it wasn't like, all right, sick. Like, you know, we just raised a shit ton of money. Now we're going to like build this massive thing and it's, you know, it's going to go like take over the world. Like when we started, like when we first launched it, like the only people who were interested were artists and like a couple collectors. So it was this like super tight knit group of people, and it grew, you know, not as quickly as we would have liked it to, but like it was very organic growth. Like everybody knew everyone. It was like, you know, just all about experimentation and creativity. And, you know, I think that is pretty unique, especially in the crypto space where, you know, like teams raise like epic amounts of capital and then try to like go out and like essentially buy community. I think we took a very different approach in that like it really was completely organic growth early on. And like, you know, there were certainly hopes that like NFTs would catch on and like really like, you know, digital art would make it into the mainstream. But I don't know that even like the early adopters, I don't think we would have imagined how quickly it was going to catch on and like the growth that the industry has seen this year. So I think that's definitely a pretty exciting, and anyway, it makes SuperRare, I think, pretty special compared to other ecosystems in the space.
Yeah, I mean, you guys like couldn't even like you guys probably, no offense, but back then, like you couldn't convince investors that this was going to be a huge thing. Like people now, they point to you and are like, listen, like the market is validated from SuperRare. Like look at their growth, etc. But back then, you said like you grew very organically. But even if you want to go out and raise, convincing investors that like, hey, NFT art is going to be massive, like how would you have done that? You know, like you guys like were the first, and so. Yeah, you guys were kind of forced to grow organically.
Yeah, I certainly was turned down by like, I don't have the exact number, but I think last time I tallied it up, it was like, I pitched like at least 120 VCs, all of whom opted to not invest.
That is wild. And this was in what, 2018?
Yeah, 2018. I mean, so it was like, you know, crypto winter. So like, to their credit, it was a rough time for crypto more generally. So if you weren't like a, you know, had already taken the red pill, then probably would have been challenging to convince your LPs as to why it was a good idea to invest in something like SuperRare. But yeah, it was 2018, and then even part of 2019, it was still pretty challenging.
Yeah, we spoke in mid 2019, and still it was like NFTs were NFTs only got hot within crypto in like September 2020.
Yeah.
And that was within crypto. And then after that, things just really took off. But I remember speaking to you in like mid 2019. And yeah, it was just still like NFTs were not taking off yet, really. But then it was like towards, and we'll touch upon this soon, but it was towards the end of 2019 where SuperRare and like NFT art more broadly just really started to go crazy. But we'll touch about that soon. So I want to talk to you about like the community around SuperRare, because I feel like that's like such an important aspect about your story, your growth, and everything. It's like, tell me, like, what is the community like?
Yeah, so I mean, it's super broad, or like, you know, it's totally global. That's one of the interesting things, even early on, is like folks in Mexico City, people in Italy, people in Singapore, like in Japan, all over the world. And, you know, very interested in art. So I'd say it's like, again, kind of like a little bit technical, but also super creative kind of community members. So people who are interested in both art and technology. And, you know, I think experimentation's also kind of been built into the ethos and the DNA since the early days.
So are the people that are involved in the SuperRare community, are they like hardcore crypto users, or is it just kind of like a mix?
Yeah, so it's definitely a mix. On the collector side, I'd say a lot of those people are pretty deep in crypto. But on the artist side, very much less so. So like early on, we did a lot of, you know, very detailed onboarding with artists, so kind of like teaching them about wallets, like what was MetaMask, how did it work, how should you, you know, think, you know, should you, how should you think about security, that kind of things. And so yeah, it's been interesting to see. I mean, like part of the initial motivation was like thinking about like, okay, the existing art market is a very small group of collectors and a very small group of artists who have access to it and, you know, can successfully monetize their art with it. It was like the beauty of the internet is you kind of have this like instant global distribution. And so like, how could, and like thinking about like places like YouTube, where it's like some kid with a channel is now competing with, you know, CNN for eyeballs, right? It's like puts, you know, video publishing on sort of like a more democratic playing field. And so like thinking that through for art, it was like, all right, with this new system, I think we can support, you know, a much larger group of artists. And so when we started reaching out to people, you know, people were definitely a little bit skeptical, but also kind of intrigued, right? Like, I think the contemporary art market is exclusionary in nature on purpose, and like almost to its detriment. Like, it's a little bit too hard to get involved from both an artist and collector side. And so I know, like, you know, SuperRare has been curated, so it's not a completely open platform. But I think if you compare to the existing contemporary art market, you know, it's orders of magnitude more open and easier to access.
Yeah, so going off that, I like, how initially when you guys launched, what was the contemporary art market's opinion of you guys? And has that changed, you know, over the course of the past couple of years?
Yeah, when we first launched, I had a number of, you know, people who did take my phone call, but over the course of the phone call were like, yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting what you guys are doing, but it's also not art, which I was, that was like one of the funniest responses. I was like, do you get to decide what art is? Like, this is so interesting. And like, you know, to be fair, I think like we were also new. And so there's, you know, some healthy skepticism. And, you know, now 3 years in, I think it's pretty clear that, you know, we're very serious about, you know, growing this space, you know, building out the tooling and infrastructure that it is going to be required. And yeah, I think now, you know, we've partnered with a number of, you know, world-renowned galleries, you know, household name artists like, you know, Shepard Fairey. And the art world has certainly woken up to the power of NFTs.
That's so cool. All right, so you call yourselves a marketplace and a social network. Could you explain why those two things are, or why you are those two things, and why having a social network is important?
Yeah, absolutely. So one was kind of just out of like intellectual curiosity, you know, like thinking about crypto and the consumer web coming together, like having advertising being the kind of like base unit of account for social media platforms, inherently, I think, like, sort of skews the incentives. Like, they're just trying to like trap you inside of the web app versus like help you achieve your goals. And so early on, I was like interested, like, could you design, you know, a social platform that like the goal wasn't to just like keep you trapped there? So there's just some intellectual curiosity. And then the second point, you know, in thinking through how the art market worked today, kind of the psychology of collecting and how digital art fit in, it seemed kind of obvious that, you know, a big part of the collecting experience was going to be wanting to show off your collection, wanting to see who artists were collecting, what other collectors were collecting. And just, you know, I think also due to like the intangible nature of the art, right? Like having the social context like makes it so much more real. And so it just seemed like if this was going to take off, social was going to need to be a big part of it.
That's super cool. Okay, so yeah, I want to talk to you about the curation aspect, because I feel like that was something that you guys did that other art platforms, NFT art platforms, didn't really kind of, I don't know, they kind of did a more open approach. But what's cool about Super is that I know I can go there and I know what I'm seeing is going to be kind of curated and of, you know, in some sense, like high quality, right? So why do you guys decide to go down the curation route early on?
Yeah, you know, in thinking through what a digital art market would, like what kind of like features it would have or like characteristics, you know, like authenticity was like something that came to mind right away. And so like thinking about NFTs, you know, you can mint an NFT that's anything, right? You can go on Google, grab some images and say like, you know, here's some NFTs I created. They just don't happen to have, you know, art that's mine inside of them. And so we felt like this is going to be a super important feature of the marketplace. And just early on, it was like, okay, you know, we could build a completely open system, but then we're going to need to build a bunch of like moderation and flagging tools. Or, you know, if we curate it, we can ensure that every piece of art is authentic in the marketplace, which seems like a much better sort of like collecting experience at the end of the day. And so, yeah, I decided to go the more curated route. So in one aspect, for just like, it was simpler to get started that way. And then the second aspect, like in thinking about what this looked like a lot longer term, you know, like with art, it's very different than something like a YouTube video, where I think like, you know, the YouTube strategy of just get all of the content and eventually we'll have algorithmic curation didn't really seem like a good fit for art. Like, not saying there's not a place for algorithmic curation in any art platform, but just like part of the excitement with art is like the storytelling that you get from curators. And so, you know, trying to pull in the human touch there just seemed to make a lot of sense to us.
That's awesome. Okay, so I want to go back to 2019 when we spoke. And yeah, the overall trade volumes throughout the entire NFT space were just very low still. And like I noticed that in, it was like maybe it was October, November of 2019 when the volumes on Super Rare really started to just kind of increase dramatically. What do you attribute that to? And that to me was kind of like this signal that, okay, wow, NFT art is really kind of taking off within the crypto community, because it still hadn't taken off in any major way outside of it. But within the crypto community, it really started to accelerate. So like, what do you attribute that to? And how did you feel like during that time? Because you guys have been grinding for so long and suddenly you guys are now getting this like amazing product market fit. So like, tell me about that whole period.
Yeah, so I think it was like a couple of different, you know, factors coming together. One was CryptoVoxels had launched. And so there was this kind of very fun new thing you could do with your art, you know, like building a gallery, showing it off was really fun. So I think that kind of led into it. So I think that was happened, and like CryptoVoxels also kind of coincided with that first like DeFi summer. So I think, you know, there was a new use case. People were also had a little bit of extra, you know, like disposable income, so to speak, because like DeFi was also starting to take off. And I think then just kind of like general awareness, right? Like the NFT community had been kind of quietly building, you know, in the background. Like there's, you know, crypto generally is like super noisy and it can be hard to distinguish, you know, really high quality product from, you know, a team that's raised a bunch and spent a lot on marketing. And all the NFT projects had just kind of quietly been building. And so, you know, the environment was sort of like primed with CryptoVoxels and DeFi happening. And then I think people just started to like take notice and were like, oh wow, like this is really serious. Like there's a ton of developers in this space. There's a ton of creativity and people are actually starting to collect this art. So I think it was kind of like a snowball.
Okay, so yeah, tell me about your path towards decentralization, because you guys have Super Rare, the marketplace, and you guys have Super Rare Labs, which is like this like decentralized entity that you guys created. So yeah, tell me about like all of that.
Yeah, so it's actually flip-flopped. So Super Rare Labs is the name of our team, and we created, or like we helped create the Rare DAO Foundation. So this is a nonprofit foundation that's whole mission is to help grow the Super Rare ecosystem and continue to grow the Super Rare network. So Super Rare Labs is just one participant in this network. And so if you think about Super Rare as it was previously, you know, we were the sole development team. We were the sole curators of the platform. And so the goal here is to decentralize essentially all of it. And so, you know, we're, I don't know, stepping to the side and like bringing in the rest of the community to help with all of those things. And so the first aspect of Super Rare that's been decentralized is the curation. And so that's what the first use case for the Rare token is, bringing on new curators to the Super Rare platform. And so, but I don't know if you've looked through kind of like what we announced, but we're announcing a new product called Super Rare Spaces. And these will be independently curated parts of Super Rare. And you can almost think about them like a subreddit. So they're gonna have their own ethos. They're gonna have, you know, be able to whitelist their own artists, kind of like mint however they want. And the goal is, you know, like one of the things we're thinking is like, okay, you know, how does this grow? How do we help support more artists? How do we help, you know, how do we onboard more collectors? And so by creating these Super Rare Spaces, you know, we're empowering other people to make their own curatorial decisions, you know, promote their own drops, kind of like bring on their own collectors and really expand the, you know, the focus of the platform.
Wow, that is so cool. I actually did not know about Super Rare Spaces, so that's amazing. All right, you have the Rare DAO, which is kind of the Rare DAO Foundation, which is kind of implementing all this decentralization, if you will. And then the Rare token, which is the asset that's currently used to curate different like art on spaces, or can you describe how that's utilized in the protocol?
Yeah, so yeah, basically we're opening up applications to operate Super Rare Spaces, I think about 2 weeks from today. So basically anyone will be able to propose opening a new space. And, you know, like we've kind of been like looking at other governance models, you know, that we thought made sense. Obviously it's all still pretty early, but basically Rare token holders are going to be able to vote on which space they want to onboard next. And so spaces are going to be brought on at bi-weekly essentially. So every 2 weeks, a new space is going to start. So the way it's going to work, you know, kind of like inspired by Mir's right race, we're calling it the space race. So every week we'll have a week for new proposals so people can propose a space they want to operate. And then the next week voting will happen and we'll bring on that new space. And so, you know, we're imagining spaces are art collectives, I'm sure some DAOs will operate spaces, potentially art galleries. You could be an individual curator, like totally open-ended, but the idea is that, you know, those people can whitelist whatever artists they want. They can run auctions and, really, you know, the goal is to kind of make spaces, these very interesting, you know, almost like sub DAOs or something inside of the super rare ecosystem.
That is so cool. I love the idea of like how I imagine it. Sub DAOs is pretty explanatory, but for me, like subreddits is like even that's easier for me to understand. So for example, I could go on there and make like Andrew Super Rare Space, right? And then I could decide to team up with whoever artists and release, I don't know, one of one art, or could I also do like one of 10? Could I do, you know, multiple editions? Like, is it kind of like my decision if I'm the owner of that space?
Yeah, so that's the idea. I mean, I think we haven't built out the like edition functionality, but I think the goal is to, you know, like Super Rare has always been about one of ones, but like I think each space should sort of make those own decisions. And so, yeah, I'd be like, you can have whatever types of artworks you want. You can collaborate with whichever artists you want. And I'm also imagining that, like, you know, just like subreddits, people are kind of into multiple spaces, right? Like, I'm sure artists will collaborate with a bunch of different spaces, and collectors, you know, will collect different spaces. But yeah, so you're correct. It's sort of this, the idea is that, like, this is for whoever's doing the curation to kind of, like, run with it and make it what they want.
That is so cool. It's like you guys are... Yeah, democratizing the power and like brand of Super Rare to everyone in the community that wants to you know take part and get involved. Like that is really, really crazy. So like with the Rare token, how do you guys think about the kind of initial use case for that and how that will evolve over time? Because right now it is mainly used for the curation, and I think that tokens are great to like incentivize certain behaviors within a protocol. But then going forward, like, yeah, how do you see that evolving? Because I feel like crypto tokens are the ultimate tool for aligning people within a community. So yeah, I'd love to hear just like what you think, where you think that might go.
Yeah, I think alignment is really, you know, is the right word. So it's, if you think about what Web 2 looked like and, you know, like what Web 3 looks like, these, you know, native tokens are really sort of an interesting new, like primitive or fundamental component that can be used in, you know, in many ways. And right, we're still figuring out exactly how to use them best. But I think one thing that's interesting, you know, with the Rare token is it really aligns the, you know, incentives of developers with the incentives of, you know, artists and collectors on the platform, and kind of like it unites everyone, right? Like it brings people together. And I think it's going to be really powerful, because instead of just, you know, our team making those decisions, it's the DAO. It's everybody who likes Super Rare. And so I think one way I think about it is it's sort of like, you know, get like creating the hive mind, right? Like it's bringing everybody together. And I think Super Rare is going to evolve and change in ways. You know, and NFTs also, right? They're like, it's still so early. It's going to evolve and change, right? If you think about what Ethereum was when it first launched to what it is today, you know, it's right. Like, I guess the blockchain is quite similar, but like the ecosystem and like all the sort of products and services that are built on top, it would have been pretty hard to imagine. And so I kind of think like that's how I think about tokens and communities. And with Rare, you know, one thing we wanted to do is, or I think one of the challenges with tokens like this is like, you want to get the community extremely involved, but at the same time, you also want to continue improving and building and like shipping new features. And so with Rare, kind of governance has been focused on curation because we think that's one of the most interesting use cases. But over time, it will evolve, and you know, we'll like the scope of governance will increase as you know we as a community get more used to you know using a token for something like that. So I think it's you know it's a learning process. Our team is learning, the foundation's learning, the community's learning, but together, I think you know the network will be stronger with the Rare token than without it.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense to me. Like, I don't think that any protocol or platform or product, whatever, that is currently decentralizing, you shouldn't just decentralize like from day one everything, because there's a ton of stuff could go wrong. So it's you know, in my opinion, it's more smarter to kind of slowly decentralize over time, and then eventually get to that point where it's really in the hands of the community. So it sounds like you guys are you know taking that path, and it's awesome.
Yeah, I think Jesse Walden from Variant coined the term progressive decentralization, and that's really how we're thinking about it, right? It's like this isn't something that happens overnight. You know, this is a multi-year journey we're all going on together, and I think like slow, steady progress is the best way to approach it.
Love it. All right, so let's pretend you have like you know $10 billion. You have a million of the world's best developers, and so like, what would you do with SuperRare if you had unlimited resources? How would it look like in the far future?
Yeah, so I mean, I think what's exciting about NFTs and you know the metaverse, which I know you're a big fan of, but I also think that like, you know, the metaverse, like in my mind, the mental mode for the metaverse is like kind of this like spectrum. And it's like, how deep do you want to go in? Like, you know, like I feel like Twitter is kind of part of the metaverse, and like AR face filters are also like on that spectrum. And so I think all of these different components, whether it's like a face filter or a piece of art or a video game item, right? Like these all sit on that continuum of the metaverse. And like another thing I think we talked about, you know, many years ago is where like, I think you said something like, well, NFTs are this really simple but secure property rights enforcement layer for the metaverse. And, you know, I think the SuperRare network is really helping to build out a lot of that infrastructure, you know, for this future state where every single digital object is backed by an NFT, it has a historical record, and it adds context to all this digital property that's kind of been ephemeral and just sitting in, you know, private corporations' databases, whereas like now all this is like kind of moving out into the open. And so I think there's just a lot, that's a long-winded way of saying like there's a lot of different touch points and like integrations that need to happen. So there's like more standards for, well, how should, you know, like, I think interoperability is probably the name of the game. So it's like, how would NFT AR face filter like interact with all these different ecosystems? You know, it's like, could you show it off on a display in your home? Could you show it off on your Twitter profile? Can you show it off in CryptoVoxels? Like, so there's a lot of, you know, I don't think like middleware is like very sexy, but there's a lot of these integrations that need to happen. And so I think that's one of the areas where, you know, SuperRare has pushed forward, like helping to, you know, publish standards around like video NFTs and 3D objects. And so like doing that in, you know, a much greater and kind of like more transparent way is going to be hugely valuable to the ecosystem. So I don't know if that exactly answers your question, but that's kind of like, I'm thinking long-term, there's just like so much integration that needs to happen with like wallets, just video game experiences, like across the board.
Love that. All right, so what do you think the future of digital art looks like? Like, do you think that digital art is going to take over the world and everything's going to go digital? Or do you think that the traditional art market and the traditional art market will coexist? Or like, what do you kind of think the future of the digital art market looks like?
Yeah, so, you know, like one of the questions early on that I had, or like the questions in the back of my mind that kind of helped, you know, bring me to working on SuperRare was like, I had friends who were trying to make it as artists, who were, you know, ran art galleries. And so I was kind of like handheld into art collecting a little bit. And it was super fun. Like, you know, you go meet an artist, you get to, like, if you buy a piece of art, like, you feel good because you now have this cool new thing. The artist feels good because, you know, they made some money and, like, saw that you appreciated their creativity and hard work. And it was this, you know, very pleasant, friendly experience. But then if you look at like many people's interactions with art, like I've heard from so many people that are like, yeah, I don't know, like art, it's not really for me. Like I went to a gallery one time and like, you know, the gallerist wasn't nice to me, or, you know, it's like, so this like the exclusionary nature of art has kind of like kept most people out of the ecosystem. And I think that, and if you think about like another, like visual art is like what we're talking about here, but like if you think about other art forms like music, you can ask almost anyone, what kind of music do you like? And they'll at least say like, oh, I like, you know, hip hop or jazz or, you know, and I hate country or like whatever happens, or I love country, like I don't know what it is, but like they have a way to like articulate their taste. They probably have some favorite artists or at least know some names of some artists. And if you think about visual art, it's not really part of our everyday life yet. So like if you talk to, you know, an average person and say, what kind of visual art are you into? They'd be like, what are you talking about? Like, and so like, I think there's a big opportunity to, you know, like in people's minds, art like lives somewhere else. It lives in galleries and in museums. And like, there's a huge opportunity to bring it into people's everyday lives. And so I think looking forward, people will kind of like find their tribe and participate in these art communities kind of in similar ways to like how people interact with music. You know, like you wake up in the morning, you turn on some music, maybe have some coffee, like in the same way you could also like, I don't know, set your avatar on Twitter to the, your however you're feeling, what avatar you want to show off that day. Put a piece of art on your screen in your home, right? Like, I think we're seeing, like, you know, visual art is, you know, it makes people feel better, right? There's like all these, you know, like having more beauty in your life is a great thing. And so I think we're kind of seeing the opening up of the art market and having it, you know, kind of like permeate people's everyday lives.
That's amazing. I love that. All right, so what sector in crypto and NFTs besides art are you most personally excited about?
Let's see. I mean, I don't know. I think the avatars is super fascinating, right? Like there's, you know, crypto people love talking about identity and, you know, with the avatars, I think this is like a really fun, it's like visual art, identity, kind of like all mixed together. And, you know, certainly was surprised by like how they've taken off by, and like, I don't know. So like, who knows, like, I'm sure the markets are going to continue to go up and down, but generally I think it's the avatars are like just a taste of what's to come. Like it's very clear that people love being able to buy a new avatar, right? Like before they're like, you know, thinking about like, what's it going to look like on their profile, you know, like, are they going to buy it and then like, you know, kind of like customize it, make it their own a little bit afterwards? And so I think that's just a great example and sort of like scratching the surface of, you know, what it means to sort of like enhance your virtual persona. And it's just like a very clear indicator that like avatars have obvious product market fit and they're just going to kind of continue to evolve and grow.
Love that. All right, last one before closing questions.
All right.
Are NFTs changing culture? And if they are, then how so?
Hmm. I think they're definitely changing culture. I think, again, I mean, like, I'm going to double down on my original hypothesis that, like, art's just becoming part of people's everyday life. Like, I think, you know, we have this, like, you know, music is, you know, audio expression for people. And so I would like to say that I think NFTs are helping people, you know, there's sort of this, like, a renaissance happening, and where, like, people are getting excited about visual art, like, you know. And so I imagine it's, like, encouraging creativity, encouraging patronage. You know, like, patronage is one of these things that, like, the internet hasn't totally figured out. You know, it's like you have amazing distribution, but then, like, how do you pay for stuff if, you know, you kind of, like, get the content for free? And so, like, I think NFTs are a really elegant solution to the patronage problem. And so it's like, I'd say NFTs have reinvented patronage with the internet, and also kind of, like, bringing more creativity into culture generally.
Awesome. All right, John, ready for the closing questions?
Uh-oh. Let's see.
All right. What is your favorite piece of art, both NFT and non-NFT?
Ooh. Favorite piece of art? I don't know. It might have to be the X copy, right click and save as guy piece, just because I feel like it's, like, you know, historically important because it's a pretty old X copy piece. It also, like, you know, embodies the ethos of, like, one of the big challenges that was, like, all the skeptics were like, but I can just save it to my computer. And so it was kind of like, you know, poking fun at them. So it's kind of like this insider's joke. And I mean, I really think that, like, you know, in 10, 20 years, people are going to be, you know, like, it will for sure be in art history books, like, you know, might be on displays at museums. So, yeah, I think that's probably my favorite piece of NFT art. And let's see. So then the other question was, like, physical art?
Yeah, physical.
Let's see. I guess, so one of my favorite artists who is not an NFT artist, but he absolutely should be, is he's like he's kind of like a skateboard artist, or I don't know, like, so he does stuff for, like, skate decks. His name is Neckface. I don't know if you ever heard of Neckface, but
I haven't, but I love the name.
Yeah,
Neckface,
he's awesome. So he does, like, pretty incredible graffiti. And let's see, I don't know, but then, like, choosing a favorite piece that he's done is going to be, like, a whole new I don't know if I could choose, like, an absolute favorite of his, but, like, just his, there's honestly some, like, similarities. Like, I feel like his graffiti is, like, it's kind of horrific and a little dystopian, which is, like, part of what I like about X copy is that sort of, like, it's intense, kind of, like, dystopian future, you know, the computers are eating our souls. So I might just leave it there that, like, my sort of, like, favorite, you know, real world, or, you know, physical world artist is Neckface. And people should go check out his art because it's dope.
I love that. All right. What is your single favorite NFT that is not art related in any way?
Wow. Not art related in any way. I don't know. I guess, well, I'm gonna only sort of answer the question. I say, like, my favorite NFT category that is not art is definitely virtual land. I think, like, so, like, kind of my mental mode for NFT, I love to think about the different use cases. Like, I think art's fucking amazing. Like, video game items, really interesting. But, like, the virtual land is I think also kind of, you know, like we're just seeing what the importance of like property ownership in these metaverses is. I think it's super interesting. Like one of the interesting things about a metaverse is like, it's, you know, sort of like infinitely large. And so I'm just very fascinated with like the pricing of metaverse land. And I think it's going to be really interesting to watch it evolve and grow. So I don't know, as a category, metaverse land, I think is just super fascinating and something I love to think about.
Love that. All right, what is your most controversial thought relating to NFTs?
I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know, maybe I should tweet more my thoughts on NFTs so I'll know which ones are controversial and which ones aren't. I guess, well, I think one of the most important things about NFTs is that like the open nature. And so I think anyone really building NFT platforms with like walled gardens like built in are ultimately not going to work. So like I think one of the best things about NFTs and like the standard itself is it's extremely simple. And so if you're building NFTs and adding features, they like absolutely need to be backwards compatible with like the original spec. And yeah, I just think like, you know, there's like a bunch of people entering the space today and trying to apply any sort of like walled garden patterns from Web 2 to Web 3 isn't really going to work. And so I think like time would be better spent thinking about how to use open standards to your advantage versus trying to like re-implement, you know, things that worked in Web 2. I don't think they're necessarily going to work the same in Web 3. So like whether it's like exclusivity agreements with artists or, you know, trying to like lock an NFT into a specific platform, I think sort of like defeat, like it almost makes it not an NFT. Like then it's just, I don't know, a Web 2 piece of content. So.
I love that. That's awesome. All right. If you could snap your fingers and instantly change or improve one thing in the NFT ecosystem, what would it be?
Personally for me, like I want just like, and this is something we're working on internally, but just like generally, I think the displayability should just be way more seamless. So like, you know, I'm imagining if I buy a piece of art on Super Rare, it's like a button that says like set as Twitter avatar, just like click that, or like you want to show off a piece of art on your TV, should be seamless and you do it from your phone. So just like, that's one of those things where it's like all the different touch points where you might want to show off your NFT, like I think it's still extremely early there. And like once we fix all, or like once there's really nice solutions for those, that's when like real mainstream adoption can happen, because it's just like part of your life, it's super easy to do. And so if I could snap a finger, all of those integrations would just work and people would be showing off NFTs in real life.
Awesome, love it. All right, who is someone that you look up to and why?
Wow, it's coming with the hard questions, bro.
Nonstop.
In crypto or just like anyone?
Anyone.
Let's see. I don't know. I'm going to go with Buckminster Fuller. He was he was like obviously extremely creative, but also like an incredibly talented engineer. And like,
what is he? Like, who is he?
Oh, dude, you should definitely. He was like an author, an inventor. He wrote a book. I think it was published in like the early 80s called Critical Path. But he is basically this like genius inventor. So he's like a super good mathematician. He's kind of like a, you know, like polyglot. Like he knew a ton of things about a ton of different things. And just like his lens, I think like he, everything he did, he was like kind of like trying to like better humanity. So instead of like out there, he wasn't like Edison patent trolling it up, just like trying to like a dragon sitting on his hoard of riches. He was just like inventing things, kind of trying, like genuinely trying to make the world better. So appreciate that. And I also feel like he was just like very creative. You know, people have this idea that like there's like technical people on one side of the room and the creatives on the other side. And I think like, you know, it's most interesting when there's super technical people who are also super creative. So Buckminster Fuller was one of those people. So
that's so cool. Yeah. I'm going to have to dive in after this chat.
Do it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Critical Path is an interesting book. It's kind of dense, but yeah, it's fascinating read.
Awesome. All right. Last question. Where do you see the NFT ecosystem in 3 years?
In 3 years. I think in 3 years, we'll pretty successfully have kind of like penetrated into many different like social media aspects. Like, you know, I bet there's like native NFT integrations in Twitter. I mean, that's probably even, I don't know, is 3 years too long for something like that? I don't know. I think it's like almost ubiquitous. Like, I think one of the interesting things about NFTs is they're kind of like Trojan horsing crypto into people's lives. Like, most people don't care about like DeFi or Bitcoin's monetary policy, but people totally understand collecting. And I think NFTs are kind of like Trojan horsing crypto stuff into people's everyday lives. And so, yeah, I'd say digital in 3 years, I could see like digital collectibles being like globally ubiquitous.
That's awesome. Awesome. Well, John, this has just been an absolutely amazing conversation. I loved hearing about your background, and it taught me that you were born to create SuperRare. So that's incredible. And hearing the founding story behind that and hearing how you guys are now decentralizing the protocol to everyone is incredible. And just, I love chatting with you. If people want to find out more about yourself, find out more about SuperRare, where should they go? What should they do?
Yeah. So, well, yeah, first off, thanks for having me on, Andrew. And yeah, if folks want to get in touch, I'm SuperRareJohn on Twitter. And yeah, you should also follow SuperRare on Twitter. And if you want to get involved in the SuperRare ecosystem, I should hop in the Discord and say hi.
Awesome. John, thanks so much for coming on.
Awesome, Andrew. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it, bro.
Hey, everyone. Stay tuned for more episodes of the ZemaRed podcast and subscribe to the ZemaRed newsletter for more info on all things NFTs. Thanks so much for listening.